Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Right Here in Mass. Joining me here today is Joe Fisher, an architect who has been designing custom homes for more than 10 years. Joe was born and raised in Burlington, Vermont, moved to Austin, Texas, and now resides in Plymouth. He brings his passion for design, empathy, concept, scale, and the interconnection of details to each project, highlighting the home's unique bond with its site. Joe, I'm excited to have you here on the show. Please share with listeners your story of becoming an architect and what inspired you to follow that dream.
I think I probably got started because I played with Legos from a very young age and really just had an interest in construction, in art, in proportionality. I was always very organized, and these things kind of came together when I was looking for colleges and careers, and all seemed to be a good fit for kind of where I ended up in architecture. I went to school in central Vermont at Norwich University and got both my undergrad and graduate degree there, and then immediately went from there to working for a custom design build firm in Vermont that does very artistic, beautiful, high craft homes. And like you said in the intro, I spent my whole life in Vermont up until that point, and then went with a total change of scenery and moved to Austin. Although I got my architecture license prior to moving, but it was the move to Austin where I decided to start my own practice, pursuing my own style of design. And Austin was very influential in that, both in a very significant change of scenery from the Northeast, both in terms of climate and in terms of building climate. So it was very educational in terms of how things are done differently in different parts of the country. And some elements I could draw on from my previous experience and some I could draw on from my time there. But I think the biggest part that influenced me in being an architect that didn't occur in Austin occurred in Australia. I did a course in 2018 with Glenn Murkett and some other extremely talented Australian architects, and was able to get an exposure to a design that kind of married a lot of things I was interested in and drew on a lot of my background from growing up in Vermont, of having an emphasis on craft, an emphasis on place. And that was really a synthesizing event in my career that brought together all these different elements that had made up my experience thus far and gave me some clarity on where I wanted to go. And it timed extremely well with my imminent move back to New England. So that was a lot of energy that I brought into reestablishing my practice in Massachusetts, in New England, while I also continue to do work in Texas, and as of this year, also in California.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
All over.
Yeah, which is great. I mean, like you said, and it's funny that you mentioned this because it was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. But what you had mentioned about when you moved to Austin, it introduced you to a new climate and a new building climate, and that affects the houses that you design. So what was that like to kind of change styles almost and go from someplace like Vermont to Austin? And what was it like to be able to adapt and be able to really be able to build up your career in this new area?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think a lot of it comes down to a sense of place. There are kind of two different areas that housing moves to in the United States. And this was very apparent in Austin as a city that was growing very quickly, is there's the drive to build as many things as possible, as quickly as possible, not necessarily with an eye towards the quality in some cases, which is unfortunate, kind of a loss for everyone involved. But there's also some people there who are doing really amazing things that, like in New England, they have a very foundational aspect to where they're created. And I think that's that's an architectural philosophy that can apply anywhere. And I think that's what really makes a house special in those cases. And that the houses that I worked on in Austin that were uniquely Austin could only exist there because they were very tied to elements of that climate, of the materiality, of the views they're highlighting. And those would seem completely out of place in New England. And likewise, the houses that I've worked on here would be completely out of place there. And I think it's that sensitivity and awareness of where you are and building to that climate. And it can be very subtle moves in a lot of cases, but it's really just being aware of where you are and how to best suit that space that sets aside the different approaches to building and design in each of those areas. And that was something that I learned in the course in Australia to an exponential degree. And it's been an incredibly valuable lesson in my career.
And I can imagine that being in all these different places has really helped to enhance the skill that you have, because you're presented with different challenges and new climates, and being able to really fit a new situation you're in compared to perhaps sticking in the same location for your entire career.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's benefits and drawbacks to both. I think there's, it's really exciting to see some architects who've practiced in one area for their whole career and how familiar and tied to that area they are. But I think you're absolutely right that it's a diversified experience lends a broader picture to what you're doing that you can then take into honing in on one area. And, you know, I think that's, there's some things in Austin that you have to approach very differently in design than you do up here. And, you know, one of them being the fact that it's 105 degrees in the summer, you know, almost right. every day sometimes. But surprisingly, that's a milder climate, despite its extremes, than we have up here. And for someone who hadn't grown up being used to that at all, it was extremely shocking. And it was part of the reason why I had an expiration date on my time there. But it's interesting from a design perspective that even though it may feel extreme when it's 110 degrees outside, it's actually only a 40 degree difference from the interior temperature. And if it's 10 or 20 degrees here, that's actually a greater difference in temperature and much more stress on the building and people in the building, and you have to design that much better. And I think it was good getting that background of designing in New England before I branched out to these other areas, because you ended up getting this sense of, here's how we do it at some of the hardest levels. I mean, we're not Minnesota, we're not Alaska, but in the continental US, it's some of the most extreme climate design-wise, and being able to take that into other aspects and realize that you don't have to dial it up to the level you need to do, you know, say in Northern Vermont, if you're designing in Texas or California, but being sensitive to that and being aware of that and designing something that isn't a one-size-fits-all approach, I think that's more of the philosophy that an architectural education experience confers that can then be applied to anywhere, really.
Absolutely. And what would you say made you kind of make this move of going from leaving the architecture firm that you were working for to starting your own? Was there something that happened that you were like, I just want to go off and do my own thing? Or what was that journey like?
I think it's always been something that I've wanted to do, of being able to have some of that autonomy and have some of that ability to make my own way. I've always been a very self-starting person. I didn't have any kind of you know, negative event with my previous firm. I mean, they're fantastic. I still am on good terms with them and keep in touch regularly. But I think one of the biggest things that the principal of that firm told me was that getting your architecture license doesn't necessarily make you a better architect overnight. It gives you the freedom to go pursue these goals if that's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that was something that really rang true with me, that I knew that eventually in my career, I'd reach a point where I wanted to really explore ideas that were uniquely my own. And, you know, like anything in life, there's not necessarily a right or wrong time to do it. And looking back in hindsight, it's easy to say, oh my goodness, I wish I'd known what I know now, what I, you know, didn't know then. But I think if you're a good designer who's always learning, you're going to look back 5 years before in your career and always have that philosophy. But I think that, you know, So that event occurred at a time in my life where it was the right time to do it. And it was certainly the right time to get an experience outside New England. I was in my mid-20s in a city with a lot of mid-20s people in it. It was a lot of fun. And I think it certainly taught me a lot about how to grow as a designer and what's valuable to me in design. And that's really, I think, if you're going to operate as an independent professional in this field, you need to be very honest about what you're bringing to the table, because at the end of the day, that's what people are investing in. They're not necessarily investing in the house as much as they are your take on the house.
Right. Yeah, good points too. And even though you work in a few states, I'm really curious to hear what it's been like to build your business up for a clientele once you move, because that's something that I know a lot of people who are business owners who have like a specific geographic region they serve kind of struggle with, like specifically photographers. I had a photographer client who moved from California down to Florida, and she's like, how do I build my clientele back up in a completely new state? So I'd love to hear, and I'm sure our listeners would too, what you did to be able to really build your brand awareness being in an entirely new state than what you were in before.
I think it's all about networking and making those connections in the industry that are going to foster future work and also allow you to just meet the people with whom you're going to be working with on a regular basis. And it's something that they don't teach you a lot in school. I mean, your education is about how to design. And this is in a way that your designs are unique to you. Your way of marketing is always a bit unique to you. Mm-hmm. I don't market in a traditional, you know, marketing sense. A lot of what I've learned in this field to do is connect with those other professionals. So when I moved here, I reconnected and connected anew with builders who shared the same philosophies I did, builders who shared the same emphasis on quality that I did, realtors, interior designers, anyone in and around the housing industry or the design field has been a great base of people to establish and just get out there and tell them what you do, what you believe, and why you do it, and you know, approach it honestly. And it's really, in this industry, it's a much slower burn in terms of how long it takes from getting your name out there to when you actually get projects of fruition. Mm-hmm. It's usually a few years. And that was what I noticed when I moved, that I didn't get a lot of projects when I first moved, but 3 to 4 years later, I was known to the people that I wanted to work with. And when those potential projects were made known to them, they thought of me. And I've anticipated that same type of buildup in my move back here. And it's kind of tough sometimes to, you know, keep reassuring yourself to stay the course. But some of the ways that I set up my firm were very advantageous to that. And that I was a remote firm from day one, long before the Zoom era. We were using Zoom to coordinate with clients. And it's been helpful both in, I can be a lighter firm on my feet financially. I don't have as much overhead. Yep. But it allows me to still work on projects in different areas where I do have some of that established rapport with mm-hmm. potential clients and the network, while I also rebuild and additionally build my network up here. Because it takes a few years and it takes a lot of legwork to just go out there and put yourself in front of the people you want to work with. But I'm a firm believer that if you continue to do that, you will fall in front of the right people and the right jobs will come to you.
Absolutely. And with being able to build those relationships and start to build up your network again, were you or have you been kind of like researching these people online and reaching out to them or attending networking events, maybe even a mix of both?
I find for me, it's usually about 80-20 online research because a lot of what I tend to do is very visual. That's usually the best way to get an impression on somebody of, oh, this designer, this builder trends towards very traditional homes that may not be exactly where I'm trending towards, or somebody who does homes that are more focused on energy efficiency or modern design. I want to meet with them and I want to talk to them about what they do. So that's usually the first litmus test to see if they're in the sphere that I'm in. But after that, I think that so much of this industry specifically is centered around in-person meeting. I don't know anyone who's decided to build a custom home and make that level of investment on a whim. Mm-hmm. And if they do, they may be a bit eccentric. I'm not sure how good of a client they'd be. So it's normally a measured process, and it's a process that people value that reassurance of taking the time to come meet them in person and, you know, not just carving out 5 minutes for a phone call or something. And it's, you know, you are their guide through a process that oftentimes they've never been through before. And a lot of it is about building up that trust beforehand. So it's about that in-person relationships. And the same with builders too. I mean, they want to know that you want to see their work, that you're going to go there, you're going to ask the questions about what you're doing and have that relationship. And for me, that's very important in constructing homes because I can design them well, but I, as much as I'd love to be able to, I can't build a full-size home as one person.
Right.
And it's about maintaining that communication with the people who are extremely good at what they do through that process to make sure that they're understanding our idea, the concerns from the clients are getting relayed to them. And in some cases, we're all there together. And it's about that communication that I think you establish the foundation for in in-person interaction.
Absolutely. There's just like, even though seeing someone face-to-face on Zoom does so much, it's like just being in person, you get to actually see the person, hear them, understand their mannerisms and all of that stuff. And it really helps to build that credibility. And like you said, Joe, rapport so much more.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. And there's, I found the best balance of that is there's some things that can be done really easily on Zoom or remotely. And there are some things that you have to do in person. And a lot of times there's different points in the design process where I want to make sure that we have everybody in the same room to discuss a very important element or to discuss the intersection of multiple disciplines. But then when we're going out to execute those items, you know, I don't need to have everyone in the same room for that. And oftentimes in design, people have their own comfort areas in terms of how they work. And I think that it's good to respect that. And my habits and preferences for design may be very different than a staff member. And so to adopt a one size fits all approach doesn't necessarily yield the best results, but it's that balance of making sure you have everyone together when you need them together. And then you have the ability to disseminate and execute to the best of your abilities and then come back together. I think that's a flexible approach to this practice that has worked very well for me so far.
Absolutely. And even though you're physically based in Plymouth, you kind of have a few different locations being able to serve different states. So for people, like I know a few business owners who have a few locations of their brick and mortar store. So kind of similar, but they struggle with being able to market or and juggle all of them or two of them, whatever it may be. So what's that been like being able to try to juggle your presence in all the different states that you're able to work in? And do you focus more so on Massachusetts compared to the others, or do you find it even out ultimately?
I think that my preference is definitely to work geographically more or less where I live. And some of the different places I'm working are based on previous relationships. The clients in California are friends that I met in Austin. Some of the projects in Austin are people that started before I moved. So there's definitely some lingering and ongoing connections based on relationships I've previously established. But my preference is definitely to work in an area very closer to home and with which I'm more familiar. But it's that establishing process. And you know, I think there's going to be, the longer I live here, the more familiar you get with the area. But I think there's some merit to that of not trying to do too many things at once and wanting to do one thing really well. And if somebody, you know, wants to hire me for a project in Texas or California or anywhere, I'd be more than happy to go there and do it. But it's establishing that presence and quality and philosophy of doing something really well in one area and being able to then take that and apply it to the unique aspects of where a new project is. But my goal in moving back here was to reestablish myself as, you know, South Shore, Cape and Islands as the home base for what I'm doing and kind of grow from there if the market and the desire is out there. But I value working in an area where I can more easily access things. It's, you know, a 5-hour drive up to Vermont is a lot easier than a 5-hour flight to Southern California. So it's nice to be close to home for sure.
Definitely. And was there anything specific about Plymouth that made you want to move there? Did it have anything to do with the opportunities and your interest in architecture, or was it something else entirely?
A lot of it was geographic and pragmatic in some aspects. I mean, we moved here in early 2021 and right before the housing market went completely berserk. So there was a little bit of opportunity in it of, wow, this is the actual place where there's a home we can buy and we're going to jump on it. But that was the end of a 2-year process of trying to look for homes from halfway across the country and wait for one that had the unique aspects that we were looking for, and luckily find one that had pretty much everything. And you know, there's a lot of factors going into that. But for me, I liked the opportunity to be closer to the ocean. That was something you don't get in Central Texas or Vermont. And so that was a big draw for me. And it was very finely balanced between, there may have been places out on the Cape that were maybe a little more affordable, but the ability to be closer to Boston, to be a bit more accessible to everywhere, to, you know, the rest of New England and Vermont where I have family, that was definitely a draw of the more centralized location here versus a bit further out. But it offers the ability to go reach those places and reach clients there if I so desire. I mean, everything's within, you know, a couple hours of travel if I need to. There was a draw for me to not live in a heavily urban environment anymore after 7 years in Austin. Right. So this was a good balance of close enough to Boston that it's accessible, but it's not omnipresent.
Absolutely. And I can imagine too, that being in this location has provided you with some really cool projects and opportunities, because I personally love the Cape Cod style homes that we drive by being in the South Shore area and Cape and Islands area, and just being able to be a part of that for your career.
Yeah, it's fun. I think there's the history aspect is something that really appeals to me, of that there's a multi-century pedigree of architectural styles that have been established, and how do you take that and build upon it? I'm always open to doing things, traditionally, but I like to push myself and push clients, not necessarily into the full floating glass box territory, but how do you build something that honors the past and also incorporates some of the really important lessons we've learned from both the technical aspect and a artistic design aspect? How do you synthesize all those for the next generation of this region's architecture? And I think it's a great place to do it. And I think it's a great place to listen to some of the lessons that have been learned over the last few centuries design-wise, and respect that. And I think some of that is just kind of taking a second to take a deep breath design-wise and look at the homes that have been here for 300 years. What do they do right? And how can you learn from that? Because you're not going to ever accrue the amount of knowledge that it takes to do it all at once. You need to stand on the shoulders of the multi-generations before you. And so I like having that accessible and all around you pretty much all the time here. You can't drive, more than 5 minutes without seeing a house that's 200-300 years old. Right. And that's really cool to be part of that historical aspect here. And, it's not as accessible in really any other part of the country in terms of this age and the history that's around it. So that was a huge draw for me to both be able to be part of that timeline and to be part of the next step in the timeline.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something I never even would think of, is just the history that's around and being able to, like you said, be able to continue to tie it into the projects and homes that you design moving forward.
Absolutely. There's a lot to learn. And every project, especially when you work on these older projects, everything's unique. And I think that's, at the very end of the day, that's what really appealed to me about this job. From the very start, was the ability to do something new, creative every single time and not be doing the same design over and over again. And it's what makes it fun. There's a chance to, you need to use a different part of your brain and a different approach every single time. Sometimes they're similar, but I'm working on a energy retrofit for a 100-year-old house west of Boston right now. And that's a completely different approach for renovations on my own house, which is much younger. So there's this totally unique aspect. And I think that's what I love about designing custom homes, is that everyone is a clean slate in a sense to approach a different set of design problems.
Right. And I especially want to highlight what you mentioned about like everything being different, especially with even just going from town to town within Massachusetts. My boyfriend is a plumber for new construction homes, and he's always saying how things can change with what you can and can't do with building. And so I imagine that, like you said, that also keeps things interesting, how it can just vary from one spot to another, but also provides unique challenges in itself.
That's very true. And that's something I've seen firsthand on projects here, that the marriage of modern building techniques and applications of contemporary building science to traditional processes and, the the red tape side, for lack of a better term, but dealing with the city and permitting and inspections, yeah. Those are very tailored around a process that's been pretty well honed for several hundred years. And trying to do something that's different, you have to have in-person conversations with the professionals that are out there doing the work and inspecting the work and make sure that everyone's understanding what you're trying to do and that you're, you know, covering all your bases and making sure you're doing things safe and that they're right. going to meet all the inspection criteria, but they're also able to maintain both the design integrity and the technical performance aspect. And I think that, you know, it varies per, like you said, per town in terms of where some jurisdictions approach it different. But I think at the end of the day, I've seen and been very encouraged by the open nature of a lot of people in this profession, that they're encouraged to see people in the next generation of fabricators, trades, architects, all both interested in the work and interested in pushing the boundaries. And I think that's exciting. And I think that's how we progress beyond just, you know, doing status quo for another generation. Is there's, you have to have, I can design a great house and draw it out, but it's useless unless I have trades that are interested in doing things a little differently and want to push themselves right. that way. And I've been very fortunate. There's a really established, talented building community here. And I think that goes for New England in general. There's that emphasis on craft and process and finding those people who are excited about doing things outside the box. That's what really excites me. Of, you know, you get that aspect of uniqueness and coolness to every project. Yeah. But you also bring the experience of people who have done it for a long time and who are interested in doing their best work as well. And they will check you and you can check them on some things. And it's greater than the sum of its parts in terms of how the final product comes out when you have that team approach.
Yeah, I love that. If there is happens to be a listener who is an architect themselves, whether they work for another firm or have their own firm, what's a piece of advice you'd give them for the industry, in addition to the advice that you gave earlier about building your network?
Oh, man. Advice for the industry. I think that the industry can benefit from broadening its reach personally. I've only worked in custom residential my whole career, so I do have a bit of an insular view of this. But from what I've seen, it's actually quite fresh in my mind. I was in Chicago last week for the national convention, and most of that is focused on where most of the architecture industry is, which is larger scale projects, commercial, institutional development projects. And if you're working in a custom residential aspect, you're already in a niche. And within that, there's niches within the other niches. And so speaking to people who work in that custom residential field, I think that it would be incredibly beneficial to be able to broaden our reach to more people who can really use our services. And a lot of times, and this is just, I think, unfortunately, the evolution of where the practice has gone, is a rightful emphasis on the artistic part of the profession, but a bit of an overemphasis has kind of made architects perceived as a luxury item versus a practical item. And it keeps us from reaching the people who can most benefit from our services. So the person with a 7 or 8 figure budget, they are not going to be as concerned about energy efficiency as somebody who is, you know, quote unquote, real person, who if their electricity bill doubles, that's going to be a major impact on their life. And the ability to solve those kind of problems through design is something that I think as architects, we all have the ability to do. And that's where you really push yourself as a designer, is how do you reach more people? And there has to be, you know, it's certainly not purely an architecture problem to solve. I think that it's a real estate and housing industry problem that we can work through together. But I think that understanding the value, the tangible value that architects bring beyond the intangible aspect, is something that we can really market and broaden in our profession for the benefit of everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now for a fun question, I'd love to hear your favorite businesses throughout Massachusetts, or it could be focused on the South Shore, just any local shops that you love to support.
Oh man. Okay. Local shops I love to support. I mean, a lot of my, in this industry, a lot of my background is trying to tie things to the environment they're made. So I try to deal with local professionals in pretty much everything. I mean, all the trades are all local just by design because they're all local people here. But businesses and, you know, more brick and mortar stores, that's, you know, as a designer and someone in the housing industry, you have kind of a stark choice of going with the unnamed national retailers or the local areas. And I think there's, gosh, I've done a lot of research on this for one of my own projects, and there's a wealth of places here that are very skilled. Trying to think some of the places I drew from. Trades wise, I had extremely beneficial experiences with Sweeney Excavating and Capital Concrete and Cape Cod Panel for the excavation, foundation, and framing work on a project here in Whitehorse Beach. And they're just world-class professionals who gave a 800 square foot project the attention that I would expect from an 8,000 square foot project. So I cannot speak highly enough of that experience. And there's a lot that goes into benefiting local suppliers as well. And that's something that I really feel strongly about. I think some of it comes from my background growing up in Vermont. It's kind of the buy local, farm to table movement applied to building. So I've tried to source materials locally. I tried to source, you know, as much locally as I reasonably can, but it's definitely an ongoing process. Trying to think of the name of it. Gurney Sawmill, I think, is down on the South Coast, and they're using all predominantly local wood to fabricate and supply the industry. And that's something that I'm using for, or will be using for, a lot of interior finish out options on this project, is I want it to have a deep connection to where it's made and where it's from. And while I could probably do an interior plaster finish that would look fantastic, that's with, you know, there's not a lot of material around here that has that connection. Whereas if you're using locally harvested timber, that it doesn't get, you know, any more locally connected than that. And so that's a really deep draw to what I do. I think I've tried to extend it to everything in this project, you know, trying to get some local Plymouth businesses. Morrison's has been great for, you know, planning out landscaping and everything, and extremely knowledgeable in trying to relocate some plants that may have become fodder for the excavator when we first dug the project. But they, you know, were extremely helpful in finding something that hasn't been popular for 40 years and trying to find it so we can replant it. And yeah. I don't know if I would get the same attention from a box store.
Right. And one thing that my boyfriend also says, which I'm like, oh, this is so true, and I didn't even realize it until he said it, but he's like, oftentimes these local stores in your industry will have way more knowledge compared to the employees who work in one of the box stores. Not everyone, of course, and not to stereotype the entire box store industry, but they often have like such fine-tuned knowledge and information that is super helpful to any project that you're taking on.
That is 100% true. And I've seen it. I worked in a lumber yard in Vermont when I was in high school, all the way through when I graduated college. And it was the same way. There was a lot of people there who had been in the industry for decades. And, you know, they just have this experience that, you know, for me, 16-year-old me, it was never going to have that right out the gate. But it's an incredible wealth of knowledge you can draw on. And, you know, to be able to not have to do hours of Google searching and research on my own to say, right, how do I find a ceiling product that has, you know, the proper elastomeric properties to accommodate for building panel movement. I could probably spend 3 to 5 hours researching that and not necessarily be any further than when I started, but going into my local hardware store with somebody who's worked there for 50 years and asking them, just telling them my needs and asking them what they have, it's, you know, I got an answer in less than 2 minutes. And I think that's incredibly beneficial. And there's a bit of talking about some advice for the rest of the industry, swallowing your pride a bit, I think, is something that can benefit, and realizing that, it does not always have to be a us versus them relationship with some of the trades, the fabricators, suppliers. You have to make sure that, you know, your design intent is being realized, but respecting their knowledge and respecting their process, and oftentimes respecting their approach to doing things when, you know, you may have drawn it wrong. And some of it is just admitting that you drew it wrong, and, you know, at least it didn't get built wrong, and you'll draw it right from here on out. But I think it's having that respect for the rest of the people in the industry, and not writing them off. It's something we can all benefit from.
Absolutely. Joe, this has been such an awesome episode, and I've really enjoyed learning more about you and your career throughout the past decade. So I know our listeners will enjoy it as well, but I'd love if you could share where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Absolutely. Easiest way is through my website. It's www.jfarchitect.com, and it's architect singular. I've had to say that on the phone a lot because people write architects with an S, and that's not me. So jfarchitect.com.
Perfect. And I will link to that in the show notes in case they missed it. But thank you so much again, Joe, for being here.
Thank you. I've really appreciated the time.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.